The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello, welcome back to the Inside Elland Road podcast. 3-0 to begin 2024. No goals conceded in 5.5 hours of football. Ilan Melier back, Sam Byron back, a new long-term contract for Archie Gray. The hunt for automatic promotion still on. And still, Graham, your replies on Twitter are flooded with people asking when Leeds are bringing in a new fullback. It's a hard life for a chief football writer, isn't it?
Not so much, because it's not my responsibility if they don't get one. It's a harder life if you then have to answer the questions at the end of January or the start of February and you don't have a left back and a right back and a 10. But yeah, my life's fine. Thanks very much.
Well, very good then. Glad to hear it. No Blue Monday from you?
No. Blue Monday is what would you call it? A capitalist construct? I don't know what it is, but it's... There's things to smile about in my life, Joe. You know, trips to Cardiff, getting to see 3 goals away from home, getting to see arguably the worst performance of a championship side this season, get what it deserved as well. And then, you know, there's other little things as well that you can derive joy from, like Ben Rama's red card last night in the FA Cup against Bristol City. That made me laugh. terrific.
I quite imagine you like the guy who took the picture of, which it was a Liverpool fan, was it?
It was Gabby Agbonlahor.
Gabby Agbonlahor, who goes over the advertising hoarding, who sort of goes, ooh, and instead of helping him, kind of gets his disposable camera out and then snaps a pic of the Villa player writhing around in pain on the floor.
It's one of the greatest moments in footballing history, that.
That's what I imagine you were like watching the FA Cup last night, just seeing that Ben Rama stood into the chest. That was the image that I was getting from you.
Yeah, it's quite a good game actually. Quite a good.
But we don't want Bristol City to be playing themselves into too much form.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, great for them to get, you know, a timely boost, just before they tackle Leeds United at home. Yeah, all seems pretty well. Like, wins calm things down. Like, they don't quell everything completely, because there is now a give me what's next culture that is just completely entrenched in football. You know, the fact that a club can sign a player and the responses can include, right, now what about a right back? Or, right, now what about a centre mid? Everyone just wants the next thing. And I'd tell you what nobody wants to hear. Absolutely nobody wants to hear, Joe, that Leeds United will probably finish in the playoffs whether they sign anyone or not in January. But that's certainly how I feel about it. I'm not saying they shouldn't. I think they should, because I think you should be there with a quite greedy, brutal January transfer window just to make sure that more or less you have all the options you need, because you don't know what's going to happen between now and the end of the season. You don't know that Sam Byram and Junior Firpo are going to continue to tag in and out. They are quite like a WWE tag team, you know, that one of them gets a bit beat up and then he kind of hops or limps or crawls to the ropes and tags the other one who comes in and then gets a bit beat up. And they've been kind of swapping in and out. But at some point they might have injuries that are concurrent. And then you've got a problem at left back. Now, you could put Pascal Struijk there, and in the Championship, I don't know what you think, but he'd probably be fine, wouldn't he?
He'd probably be fine, but it's not something that you want to do.
Exactly. Exactly, Joe. The but
I was just thinking there. Is that not something you could ask Daniel Farker this week? You know, you've asked your players to be, particularly your strikers, to be very greedy and quite brutal. Are you not asking the same of your transfers chiefs and the recruitment staff?
What would he say to that? No, this is not quite my topic. yeah, but I mean, I have been thinking about, you know, the worst case scenarios for Leeds, and those two left backs getting injured at the same time is a worst case scenario. And yeah, like I said, you could put Strike there, but you don't want to put Strike there. You want to have Strike at centre back. You want to have him in the role that he's played very, very well this season. Right back, you know, you've got a worst case scenario there of Archie Gray, for whatever reason, being unavailable. Jamie Shackleton's fitness and availability has been very, very patchy, very hit and miss. So there's potential for some peril there. Now, and all managers, you know, they probably run through with their squad to the nth degree the solutions that they have. You know, maybe Gruev at right back is one that Farker would do. I don't know. But I don't see why you wouldn't absolutely bust a gut to ensure that if the worst case scenario happens, that you are well protected. So Farker continues to tell us they're staying awake, they're alert, they're looking for good opportunities. We know that there are players that they like, but there's this suggestion of we don't want to get a player in who's okay this week and then discover that a player who was two or three above him in the list becomes available next week. So there's that domino effect that Leeds are kind of anticipating. And I guess it's calling for everyone to hold their nerve a little bit, because the summer, obviously we've spoken about it before, the summer went late, didn't it, with their transfer business. But here we are on the 17th of January, you know, and it hasn't been so quiet in terms of outgoings and in terms of situations in the squad. It's been very, very, very quiet in terms of incoming business or getting close to stuff. So whilst I think that they could come out of January and they could well be absolutely fine and still go up, I just think that insurance would be the watchword for me this month. Go and get yourself some insurance.
Do you think we should pack in our dreams, our hopes and dreams of being sponsored by Flamingoland and actually move on to insurance companies then? Maybe market ourselves to some of West Yorkshire's best insuring firms, because clearly you've got a passion there for insurance. I agree with you. I feel as though we're kind of going around in circles a little bit with the transfer stuff until something ultimately comes to fruition. I remain of the opinion that if anything is going to happen, well, I mean, it is the case now because we are at that stage. I was of the opinion at the beginning of the window that if anything was going to happen, it would be in the final 2 weeks, because that's when, you know, predominantly Premier League squads, which Leeds are going to be looking to recruit from, they assess their options, they assess who they want to bring in, which squad places they want to free up to bring in their own additions in the January window. And ultimately, that doesn't happen on the 1st of January. That happens midway through the month when the deadline gets closer and closer. And they think, well, right, if we're going to bring somebody in, we have to act now. We have to lose somebody. We have to free up some space. And that's, I think, that behind closed doors, that is exactly what will be happening right now. Those are the conversations that Leeds are waiting on to take place. And then when they do, and they get notice that X player or Y player that they have an interest in is available on loan or available permanently, then that's when they'll make their move. So yeah, I think we're into the stage, the period at which Leeds will do their business if they are going to do any. But again, as you say, I think materially, it's probably bringing in a fullback probably doesn't have, you know, just one player doesn't have a massive, massive impact on where you finish in the table. It's an old cliche, but it is a team effort and the team is strong.
Yeah, I think what I would be keen to avoid though is a scenario where you absolutely flog Archie Gray into the ground towards the end of the season and he runs out of steam, or anyone runs out of steam because there was an over-reliance, and then you limp to the playoffs if that's to be Leeds' fate. Or you don't end the season in your best form because everyone's absolutely battered. I think you need to be careful with Archie Gray. You know, he turns 18 in March. he's still very, very, very young. And you need to be careful with Ethan Ampadu as well, because he has played so much football this season, and he's so, so important. Yeah, I think just being careful is key, and ensuring that when it comes to the end of the season, you're sprinting through the finish line, because if it is the playoffs, there are going to be teams, and we can come on to talk about this, but there are going to be teams, probably like Coventry, who could present a real problem.
Okay, well, let's stick with the good news for now. And we're going to talk about Archie Gray, as you just touched on there. He signed a new long-term contract, or rather agreed on a new long-term contract, which will come into effect upon turning 18 later this year, in March, as you just mentioned. That will see him at least contracted to the club until the summer of 2028. The player himself described it as a dream come true. A boyhood fan of Leeds, you know, the familial links, I don't think need to be explained. And you know, given how influential and important and integral to Daniel Farke's team selection he has been this season, it's such an important piece of business for him now to be on the same length of terms as Jorginho Rutter, who's the club's record signing. And let's not forget Jack Harrison as well. He's on terms at Leeds until 2028, but obviously a different situation with him being out on loan. How positive is this new contract extension for Leeds United as a whole, Graham?
Eight units of positivity. It's very, very, very good news. It's not a surprise to me at all. The Gray family, obviously absolutely beloved in Leeds. One thing that's always struck me is just how grounded and sensible everything is with the Greys. His dad, very, very level-headed, knows the game very, very well. Obviously an agent, so knows the business side of it and knows kind of the situations that crop up, knows about looking after players. So he's kind of coming at it from a parental side and from an agent, a business side. But it's always struck me that what seems to come first with them, and this isn't just with Archie, I think this is generally kind of an ethos, perhaps as an agency as well, that where is your best chance of playing? You know, which club is going to let you play at a time when you really need to play? And it's a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it, for Archie Gray at Leeds? This is the club that he loves. He's obviously really enjoying himself. He's clearly getting on very well with Farke, and under Farke, he's made himself a very popular member of the dressing room. You know, when I went to the school visit earlier this season and he and Rodon were there, yes, there was a little bit of that, you know, Archie's the young lad, but the way you see him interact with his teammates and the way they interact with him, it's interacting as peers. You know, he's one of the team. He's not the work experience lad in the corner making the tees. They've accepted him as a proper player, and that's because he is one on the pitch. So if things are going this well, I just don't see why you wouldn't want to, you know, make it official, I suppose, make it more formal with a longer deal, because obviously this is just that Leeds have done everything as they could have done. You know, they couldn't have got him on this deal up until he was 18. So at the first opportunity, getting it done is just very, very sensible. It's all very sensible. And what a season he's having on the pitch. Like that, there have been periods where you've looked and thought, is he a right back? And then there's been other games where you think, actually, he's probably going to be one of these who could do a job no matter where you put him, because he's just a good footballer. You know, he's good on the ball. He's good in tight situations. He's good at retaining possession. He's good at winning it back. He's good at running with the ball and dribbling and moving it forward. That little pass round the corner and over the top for Dan James on Saturday in Cardiff was absolutely superb football. And it just feels like he's learning and growing at the minute. Good news for both parties, I think. Not just for Leeds, because obviously it protects them. Because you'll see bits and pieces in the national press about so-and-so are preparing a bid. In fact,
monitoring. I love monitoring as a term.
monitoring. Yeah,
as if the biggest and richest clubs in world football aren't monitoring someone who's 17 playing 2,000 minutes in the Championship.
Yeah,
like of course they are.
It's like me. It's like saying that I'm monitoring the vegan chocolate almonds that are in the cupboard. Of course I am. Of course I'm aware of their existence. Yeah, you completely made me lose my train of thought now, and all I can think about is vegan chocolate almonds. The ball over the top around the corner for Dan James was very, very good. Yes. What I was going to say was some football clubs, Premier League clubs, have this weird thing where their website is also used as like a content aggregator to bring in traffic. And so it picks up news stories. And from time to time, it has this like glorious juxtaposition of a story involving that club that has clearly not come from the club and is not endorsed by the club, but is on their website. And Liverpool FC had one with them being linked with a move for Archie Gray, which just came across as like incredibly hopeful or incredibly, I don't know, stupid to have it on there. It did make me laugh. But yeah, they are gonna be monitoring. They are gonna be hovering, and him having this longer deal is good business sense for Leeds. And also, I think it's quite reassuring that he and his camp were happy for it to be that length. You know, that they were happy for it. They were not saying, "Well, we'll give it a year, and then we'll see where we are." Because you could see scenarios where I don't really like the phrase wonder kids, but I suppose he embodies that for Leeds at least. Their agents and the people will be saying, let's not do anything rash here. Let's give them a year and then see where you are, because there's all these other clubs that are looking, and in a year's time, you know, it would more easily facilitate a move if you had a short-term contract. Whereas this, you know, it looks after Leeds, doesn't it? The length of the deal.
Absolutely, it does. And yeah, I think that was very much needed positive news from a Leeds perspective this month. Obviously, the disappointment of losing, you know, I mean, people will view it one of two ways. You know, some will support the decision to send Jed Spence back to Spurs. So others will think, well, you know, attitude or whatever was insinuated by Farke aside, it would be better to have him as a body, as insurance. And then obviously the disappointment, the massive disappointment of losing Luke Ayling from the football club. I think the only thing that really could have matched sort of the strength of feeling, but sort of the opposite way, is a new contract for Archie. So for them to get it done is really positive, as you say, very sensible. And yeah, he's very much not the work experience kid, is he? He's one of the first names on the team sheet, whether that be in central midfield or right back. Do you still see me as the work experience kid? You know, when you're in your little press huddles with Phil, Popey, Barron, and co, or am I? I don't know. Am I making 28 appearances in the Championship, over 2,000 league minutes in half a season?
I would say you're certainly growing. You know, that's definitely a learning experience for you. I'm not gonna be dancing on any tables, you know, yet. What you've got to do is put together a good first season in the Championship, Joe. Because you know, that's what it's about. It's not about individual accolades after half a season.
Well, look, all I can say to that is, you know, I've got the knife between my teeth. I'm really, really going to dig in, and there's going to be no accusations of a lack of focus, or, you know, not feeling like I'm all in. So yeah, that's very positive from my side of things. So, you know, just like me and Archie, you know, we're basically the same. Is what I'm trying to say. Speaking of being basically the same, should we discuss all three of Leeds' results already this season? Because this calendar year, 3-0 against Birmingham, 3-0 against Peterborough, 3-0 against Cardiff. The Cardiff game, what was your reading of that outing for Daniel Farke's team? Because it seemed very, very routine.
It did, didn't it? Cardiff, absolutely tragic, just woeful. Pretty shameful performance, actually, because when you go a goal down at home early and you'd set out your stall to park the bus, and I don't say that in a derogatory way, because if your team is going to face a team like Leeds that has Routere at 10, that has Somerville, you know, who's having an unbelievable season, Dan James, who's a flying machine and is racking up goals and assists, and Patrick Bamford is just coming off the best goal he's ever scored in his career, then going defensive is, there's no shame in that whatsoever. And then what you do is you try and nick a goal from a set piece, probably, because that's one of their big strengths. And then you just shut them out and frustrate them, and you do what others have done this season. You know, you do what Stoke managed to do, what Sunderland managed to do. You know, Preston was 2-1, wasn't it? But there's a bit of a blueprint there to follow. So I could understand why Cardiff decided, let's go a bit more defensive today and we'll sit in. When you concede, though, it throws up this horrible dynamic for a manager of stick or twist. Because if you go for it, there's the risk that actually you're about to get thumped, like really, really badly turned over at home. And if you persist, you know, what you're saying to your fans is, yeah, we might be able to nick an equaliser at home here, but sometimes it's going to look like we're settling for a 1-0 defeat on home turf. So I was really interested once in how it would play. And when Leeds get the first goal in a game like that, you almost think this should be it, done, really. But that wasn't the way of it at Rotherham, was it? So these teams have to be beaten, they have to be put to the sword, and sometimes it's not easy, but Leeds made it look very, very easy. That's the kind of the counter argument to how bad Cardiff were, was how good Leeds were and how many chances they made and how many goals they probably should have scored in that first half. They really opened them up. And I felt like Cardiff, they decided to stick to the defensive plan, even when it was 2-0, and but their application was off as well. You know, for a team that was sitting so deep and trying to defend, the space that they left Leeds to operate in the final third, and the amount of times they let themselves be cut open, they were dreadful, really, really dreadful. But the ball had to be put in the back of the net, and Leeds did that three times. So they avoided that kind of narrative cropping up again of tricky away days, and 3-0 wins. I mean, that is, it's quite literally the perfect start, isn't it, to a calendar year?
Absolutely, yeah. Three different scores as well. Dan James getting back amongst the goals. Patrick Bamford continuing his scoring run, 3-3 now. And Jorginho Rute getting his fifth of the season. Couldn't really have picked three better scorers, could you?
No. What was interesting as well is that Somerville didn't have his best game for me. And yet he came out with a couple of assists. You know, he probably could have had a goal had Dan James let that one run across his body, but how much of a mug would he have looked if he'd let the ball roll across his body, it had come off the post, and then he wasn't able to scramble it in, or a defender had managed to get back. So I would always advocate sticking the ball in the net, regardless of whether you think it's going in or not.
As long as you're onside.
Because
then you look like an even bigger mug.
Yeah, didn't we have a goal recently where Patrick Bamford jumped out of the way to ensure that the goal was scored, because he thought he might have been in an offside position? That's the kind of awareness you need in situations like that. And Cardiff
I was thinking actually when you mentioned that there, when Patrick Bamford jumped into the path of the ball at Rotherham to then nudge it onto Jadon Anthony which is maybe why
more recently he took such lengths to get out of the road of the ball. I can't remember who scored a goal, but he removed
Somerville
himself
at home, I believe it was. I can't remember who it was against, because obviously there's been so many instances. Was it Coventry? Or was it Birmingham?
I don't know. Maybe Birmingham. Birmingham would make sense because Bamford hasn't been on the pitch when a lot of goals have been scored during his substitute phase of the season.
And yeah, your long-term memory issues as well.
But Cardiff were appealing for offside with Dan James. And it was tight, wasn't it? But he was on, mercifully, and stuck that one away. Bamford's, they all count, even the ones from your backside at the second attempt that are kind of scuffed or swept home from a few yards. And that came from... I'm trying to think how that goal was scored.
Was it Junior Firpo down the left?
Yeah. Junior Firpo managed to find himself almost on Bamford's toes, didn't he? In this 6-yard area. But what was interesting was that Somerville didn't have his best game, still managed to make a big contribution, but others stepped up where Somerville wasn't there with goals. James again in the right place. James could have had another goal. You know, he hit the bar in the second half. Bamford gets another goal. And then Ruter, which I think is the most pleasing one, I think the most important one for me, was that Ruter scored, because I almost feel like he needs to get a goal every now and then, every couple of weeks or something, just to stop frustration creeping into his game. And because he gets himself into so many good positions and his finishing can be wild, you know, it can be really hit and miss. And yes, he's contributing mightily with what he does, particularly now that he's at 10. I think we find a home for him. I really do. If Bamford can stay fit ahead of him, because the variation they bring together is really, really good. But even when he's creating it and making chances and getting assists, you can see he is visibly aching to score himself. And the later it goes in games, you know, the more he's sprinting to try and get into positions on the edge of the box where he can finish, and the more angst you can see in him whenever he doesn't. And he had a few chances in that game, and it felt like it might just be one of those where the goal eluded him and he'd come off the pitch like happy that they won, but probably also thinking, oh, I really need to score. And you don't want it to become a weight on him, you know, like it probably became with Bamford before he got that goal against Birmingham. So the fact that Ruter scored, the fact that it was such a great goal. I mean, Ruter starts it in his own area, curling the ball forward, and the way Leeds swept forward, and the unselfishness of Somerville to pass the ball back instead of having a go from there, of Bamford to dummy it, and the composure, I suppose, that Ruter showed despite those missed chances. I just felt it was an excellent, excellent team goal, and really, really important that he just ticks that box and just kind of calms that any kind of anxiety or frustration about not scoring goals.
Some celebration as well. Peels off towards the fans in the away end. Does the air guitar. Doesn't quite have the hair to let it run free like a certain ex-Leeds United player. But yeah, I think that went down really well, didn't it, as well, with the fans and certainly with Luke Ayling as well. He shared Jorginho's Instagram story on his own Instagram platform, which was a nice touch, I think.
Yeah, it would have been nice if he'd mimed the release of the hair. That would have been funny. That would have been very funny. But yeah, lovely tribute to Ayling.
I feel like as well with that, you know, Jorginho probably didn't know very much about Leeds when that goal was scored. I mean, that was how many years ago now? Four? Just coming up 4 years. Obviously nowhere near being a Leeds player at that time. And yet he knows of it. He's thought of it in the instance that he scored. Like the first thing that he's thought to do is, I'm going to do a tribute to Bill. I don't know. It looks as though a player who gets it, you know, is really engaged with what is important to the fan base, and clearly somebody who has engaged with somebody who has been very important and integral to the squad. And I think as a football supporter, you always want to, you want to see that from players who represent your team. You want to see them invested, don't you?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Luke Ayling had shown him that goal. I wouldn't be surprised if Luke Ayling had shown every new signing since the goal was scored that goal. And equally, I wouldn't be surprised if Ayling had insisted that goal was in like their welcome video, you know, on week one when they're doing their health and safety training and stuff like that. I wouldn't be surprised if that goal formed part of their, you know, initial welcome to the club. It was really nice to see him do it. Fans love stuff like that. I don't think Rudiger could get much more popular with Leeds fans, and it's such a far cry from where we were. I don't want to say, oh, you can't say a year ago, because he's a year ago.
He signed a year ago,
but it wasn't long after that that people started to think, oh, actually, this guy isn't, and because they were being told this guy, and they were being shown this guy isn't one for now, he's one for later, because of the scant usage he had under Gracia when he came in, and then of course Allardyce, what he said about him. Things have really turned around for him in a massive way, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's difficult to not be pleased about it, because, you know, it makes you think, what on earth were they seeing in training, or rather not seeing in training at that time, with a squad full of players who maybe had one eye on the summer, whereas you had Rutter, who now very evidently appears to be very invested. And you can't imagine that his training level will be that much higher now than it was 6 months ago. Well, eight, nine months ago. But hey, that's the past. As he said in a recent interview, that's the past. We're just thinking about the future and looking forward. And speaking of the future, looking forward and good performances, do you know who else had a good game on Saturday at the Cardiff City Stadium? Ilya Gruev, which, again, was nice to see.
It was. God, wasn't he lucky to stay on the pitch, Joe, after that two-footed lunge?
I knew you were going to bring that up immediately. Look, I've said my apologies on Twitter. That's all you're getting. This is my opportunity to absolve myself of any blame. But I did very much enjoy not knowing that there are 55 different ways for people to tell you you're absolutely rubbish at your job when it comes to getting what ultimately amounts to a minor detail in a pretty routine 3-0 win wrong. I have clipped up a few of my favorite responses. So if you're listening to this and you recognize some of the words that were used, or rather some of the insults, then pat yourself on the back, because it gave myself and Graham a very, very, I don't know, a very good chuckle after the game, after all was said and done. Of course, and if any of our bosses are listening, the enjoyment was only had after we'd finished all of our work for the day. This one was actually as I was getting on the train. So it was like 4 and a bit hours after the game. And it was, Joe, you got this so wrong. I was like, thank you. Thanks very much. And Graham, you'll notice that they get more and more offensive as they go on.
Excellent.
This one I quite liked. Wasn't even a foul, Joe, you welly. good insult, you know, harmless. My favorite one wasn't expletive, wasn't really that offensive, but it was hilarious. Are your eyes painted on? That's excellent. And again, I feel like we should stress, for anyone who isn't understanding where we're going with this, this was because I suggested in the 75th minute or whatever it was, that Gruev, who did make a bit of a lunging tackle on one of the Cardiff players, did also get the ball. I suggested that he might have been lucky to stay on the pitch, because he was shown a yellow card. I thought it was maybe orange. And yeah, replays, which I saw after the game, showed that it was actually quite a good tackle. And it was the Championship officiating, which I should have been saying needed to be improved. But yeah, moving on.
We're not moving on.
No, yes, we are.
No, we're really not. What I will say for you in your defense is that you're live tweeting things that you've seen once, right? And from our vantage point, Gruev lunged, looked like it was off his feet, out of control. The Cardiff player goes down, and the referee's right there on the scene. Now, your first take on that was fairly similar to mine, like, oh dear. And then people who are watching at home on a screen and very quickly get a replay, to my mind, they take a little bit of a liberty now and again with how much of a right they feel they have to castigate someone who's seen it once live in the flesh from 100 yards. And people want your kind of raw reaction to things. There would be very little point in us live tweeting, you know, from watching it on a screen, you know, from watching it from replays, because it's all very sterile then. I felt like it was a bit of a I felt like it was a risk that I didn't feel like he needed to take, particularly at that stage in the game with the scoreline as it was. I very much enjoyed the reaction, however. I really do enjoy it when it's somebody else and not myself. But just do remember that if you've seen it twice or three times, you can't get that angry at someone who's seen it once live.
But the insults suggest that, yes, you absolutely can.
Keep the insults coming in, though. keep up the good work.
make them as creative as possible. You know, really go after the substance of my character.
Yeah, agreed.
There was one, again, this one, they actually tagged Specsavers and said, any appointments for Joe, which again, top marks for creativity. It's a classic. Very good. Joe, please have another look. Good God, wasn't even a foul. I mean, you know, it's a subjective decision when you're talking about refereeing. This one was really good because it didn't at me, it didn't tag me. It was in sort of the replies further down, and it was, some of our journalists are huge clowns. So that's you taking flack on that one there. Well, also, our journalists. Okay, I'll remember that. I'll come to yours for me pay packet next time, anonymous account. Mad that you get to paid to report on football, Joe. Wasn't even a foul. Believe me, I'm still pinching myself as well.
It is mad.
Here's where the expletives start to come in. Clearly won the ball, you're talking, and then let's just say it rhymes with padlocks. It doesn't rhyme
with nothing padlocks. Rhymes with padlocks.
God's sake. But I'm pretty sure the more creative amongst you will know which term, which ends in locks or looks, they said there. This one was particularly funny. Not a foul, not a card or anything, as if I was the one who brandished the yellow. You ugly four-letter word. What you on about?
Ugly. That's so unnecessary. That's all. Oh, that's superb. The level of anger, like the sheer fury in that response, that they feel that they need to castigate your physical appearance. Oh, it's actually just superb.
Immediate as well. Just brilliant.
Gruev.
So, marks everyone. But yes, Gruev. Gruev performance.
Yeah. Best we've seen so far. Yeah. Of him. Farke highlighted after the game that, yeah, he might have been a bit underwhelming in his previous starts at 8, but this was him playing at 6. You know, this was him doing the Ampadu role, where he's the deep lying one, and it's a bit more of a natural fit for him. And he did look like a natural fit. You know, everything's caveated with, yeah, Cardiff were awful, but Gruev, I thought, was just, he and Kamara were always there. Mm. You know, they were, there was only maybe one or two scenarios in the entire game where Leeds looked in any way exposed to a counter or in any way out of shape. Kamara just seems to have that in his game, that he reads it and knows where he needs to be next. If the move breaks down, if the ball comes out to the edge of the box, if an opponent gets a foot in, Kamara just always seems to be around. He's got great mobility as well to put himself there. But Gruev had that as well at Cardiff. And I thought we started to see a bit more of an expansive passing game from him than we've seen previously as well. Previously, it's been like very short passes, you know, not a great deal of adventure, mostly sideways and back, retaining the ball, but not particularly progressing it. At Cardiff, I thought he was a lot more progressive. And I'm not going to look into the statistics in case they don't bear me out, in case they contradict me. I'm just going to have that thought and run with it. He definitely played the ball forwards longer a few times than he has previously. But he was good. He was just very good. And it's reassuring, isn't it? Because you could have been forgiven for thinking, Farke's had a look at this guy and decided, no, he's not quite my tempo. Because of the way he's used in Ampadu. But I don't know whether the FA Cup game allowed Farke to take a look in maybe a less pressured environment and thought, actually, yes, this guy can fill in. I wonder if we might see him a little bit more, therefore, in the second half of the season. I wonder if Ampadu will maybe come off in games a little bit more now that Gruev has kind of stepped in and shown that I can do this six role.
Potentially. I still think that obviously Ampadu is the premium choice in that role, considering that we have termed it the Ampadu role. But it's good to have options in reserve, isn't it? It's very, very good to have an alternate in that role where one of whom you can rely on. And I just think on the topic of Kamara and Gruev, all of the midfield options, all four of them, including Ampadu and Gray as well, they cover the space really well, which you can't say was always the case last season. You know, you had players who maybe didn't get up and down the pitch as well as they, as well as the current options do. You know, thinking maybe Mark Rocker, who is maybe more of an on-ball midfield, deep-line midfield player. But I feel like the current four, and yes, the caveat is they're playing in a lesser division, but the current four, their quality that they have, I do think is very much out of possession as much as it is in. So, yeah. And with Gruev, he completed 68 of his 70 passes against Cardiff.
And given that he did open up a bit more with his passing, you know, that makes that stat more pleasing, doesn't it? Because if he's just passing it backwards and sideways to the centre backs, then you know, you or I could stand there and make 68 of something passes, maybe not 70.
I'm not sure I'd make 68 of 680 passes in a professional game.
Yeah,
I also have a question: why on earth the team was constantly going through me trying to make?
Haven't you learned? Have you learned nothing? Ampadu at centre back as well. Thought good again. It's not like he's playing an alien role. I mean, I don't know if it'll be this season or next season that he'll surpass his centre back appearances with his centre midfield appearances. But as of right now, he's played more times as centre back than he has in midfield.
Farker loves to tell everyone that.
He does. That's one of his favourites. But he looked absolutely fine. And Rodon, I think that without Struijk, Rodon has taken it upon himself to be a bit more of a leader. Like, I feel like he's probably relishing that, you know, of this centre back pairing, I am the more natural under Farke. At least I'm the first choice centre back in this pairing. You know, I'll always be in this position. So he's adopting a bit of a leadership role. And then you've got Ampadu, who's wearing the armband next to him as well. So it just felt like you had a really solid base, lots of physicality, very, very good on the ball, the pair of them. Rodon stepped out and ran it a couple of times. Ampadu tried that once down the left flank and then passed it into the middle straight to a blue shirt and got a bit of a rollicking from his manager. So he didn't try that again. But they just looked so comfortable, didn't they? And maybe that is partly to do with what they were up against. But they've had two games at it now. And if Struijk isn't back for the weekend, then you would have no qualms really about putting Ampadu next to Rodon, would you?
No. I think that's, again, another option to have that Leeds didn't have at the beginning of the season, or at least wasn't tried. They've come through a period in which they've had to adapt. You know, with, you've got to think about not having Byram, not having Melier, you know, Charlie Creswell not being an option. And they've done reasonably well. I mean, they've done extremely well if you want to speak in hyperbole, because they haven't conceded in 5.5 hours. So, you know, I've clearly jinxed it now, and it'll be a 30-second concession against Preston at the weekend, won't it? But no, it's been good to watch, and it's been effective, and it's been convincing. So
yeah,
I'm going to stop praising them now, just in case there is some sort of curse that I'm running the risk of.
I have a question for you.
Go on.
Do you think that Joel Pirro has much chance at all of getting back into the starting lineup against Preston if both Ruiter and Bamford are fit?
No, I don't think there's a good chance, because why change something that is clearly working?
I feel like Pirro's moment will probably come again this season.
If Bamford gets an injury.
Yeah, but I don't foresee a situation where Bamford suddenly plays every game between now and the end of the season and is in perfect physical condition. That would certainly be an ideal scenario if it's working the way it is with Ruiter right now. But there may well be a dip in form that comes along. There may be a little niggle that comes along. It may be that he's tired at some point and needs a break. Yeah, I think Pirro will definitely have a part to play. Just in the way that we maybe didn't acknowledge enough in the first half of the season that Bamford would have more of a role to play than the one he was having. I think it would be silly to write Pirro off as a late 2023 man and not a man for the first half of 2024. I think he'll definitely have
changes. Everything changes so quickly in football, doesn't it? That's essentially what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it is. I could have just said that. I'll say that next time.
Brevity is the word of today.
The 9 and 10 dynamic at the minute, there's a lot to like about it. And it feels like it might just be key for those games against opponents that would just want to sit deep. Because Ruter is so good with a player at his back and players around him. You know, his passing is so good and so insightful. And his dribbling is so good that I feel like it's given Leeds a lot more creativity in games where they would have struggled to create clear-cut chances against resolute teams. And Bamford is helping to create a bit of space for Ruter by playing on the last man. And if the ball goes up there and he's on the defender's shoulder, the defender has got his hands full because Bamford might well win it. He'll certainly put pressure on the defender. So the defenders have to stay with him and they have to drop. And that means that there's a little bit more room for Ruter to operate in. So they've got variation. They can go long and hit Bamford, and he makes those runs that he times quite well in behind. Or they can go short and go into Jorginho's feet with his back to goal and try and work off him. I mean, it's been 3 games now, and they've scored 9 goals and won all 3. So, I think you're absolutely right. The only way it changes at this minute is if for some reason one of the two of them gets injured.
Can I ask you a question in return?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you were to get away for some winter sun, where would it be?
It wouldn't be somewhere where there's snow. If I was given a few days off and I was given a footballer's resources, then I would be somewhere very hot indeed, wherever that is right now in the world.
But would you not want to maybe stay a bit closer to home? Because you don't want to be traveling, you don't want to be jet lagged for when you inevitably get back after 3 or 4 days off. And you have to be ready, but you have to be ready. You have to be there with a quite brutal training session to convince Daniel Parker.
Where is the warmest place I can get to within a 4-hour or 5-hour flight?
Malta. Greece.
You could probably go a little bit beyond Malta.
Greece isn't warm at this time of year.
No.
North Africa.
Then maybe that's where you'd find me.
I'd love to see you in Marrakesh, just ambling around the bazaars.
With a knotted handkerchief atop my head to protect the scalp, the exposed scalp.
It would be like, what was that thing that Ricky Gervais, Stephen Merchant and Carl Pilkington did a couple of years ago. It's probably about 15 years ago now. What was it called?
The Office.
No, An Idiot Abroad.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. Why
say it yourself, because then it's something that you're going to probably use against me now.
Why
do you remember
link,
when you called me an idiot? No, it wasn't that.
Why the link? Why are you asking me about holidays?
Oh, because Jorginho Ruter has been in Avoriaz, or if that's how you pronounce it, a popular ski resort in France, which I'm guessing is why you said you wouldn't be somewhere where there's snow. But yeah, it seems as though Daniel Farke has given certain members of the squad some time off between the end of the Cardiff game and coming back for training. I'd imagine that they're probably back in training today or tomorrow to get amply prepared for Preston on Sunday. But yeah, Jorginho making a few people a bit nervous that he might have been on the slopes. But no, footballers' injury insurance probably does not cover skiing. So, and he also actually tweeted, he replied to somebody who was saying that they were maybe a bit nervous. And he said, don't worry, I'm staying in my moon boots. So there you go.
don't use the phrase moon boots. Now people think that he's got 2 snapped Achilles.
No, oh, come on. That's just the pessimist in you.
If you saw on Twitter, right, knowing what you know about Leeds United online, right, Leeds United Twitter in particular, the phrase Jorginho, if one of you or I had tweeted, Jorginho Ruter has been spotted back in his native France in moon boots, you know the meltdown would heat Yorkshire for the entirety of this winter. Nobody would have to put their central heating on again.
Yes, but that would be very unprofessional and disingenuous, because if we were sharing that with all the facts, then that's very misleading. Whereas, you know, someone said, does this picture make anyone else nervous? Don't get injured, lad. And then tagged Georgie. Georgie replies with, no worries, I walk only with my moon boots, with an emoji of just like relief. That's him communicating directly with the fans, letting them know everything's fine. No need to get your knickers in a twist. It's absolutely fine. I'm not skiing. Yeah. I'm just enjoying the après or whatever it is that people who ski do.
Enjoy it, but obviously whatever enjoy it by being disciplined is in French.
We should find that out, actually.
I am embarrassed that I don't know, actually. So I'll endeavour to look it up afterwards. I think it'll be Routier and Bamford again against Preston. You raised an interesting point about right back for this game.
I did, yes.
Go on, and again.
I will explain it and raise it on the podcast. It's Leeds having lost Jed Spence and Luke Ayling this window. You've got Archie Gray as the first choice right back effectively now. He did struggle quite considerably against Liam Miller on the left wing for Preston on Boxing Day. And, you know, you'd imagine that that'll be the same matchup again this weekend. You know, do you risk Byram instead? Because he only played 5 minutes against Cardiff. He couldn't make it into the squad for Peterborough. He only managed 15 minutes before pulling up with a recurrence of that hamstring injury against Birmingham. I'm not sure he's ready to go in from the start unless Daniel Farke tells us differently this week. But then also, do you take Archie out? Do you, you know, you've shown him incredible faith in giving him this long-term contract. Surely you anticipate in the 4.5 years that are left to run that you'll be coming up against better wingers than Liam Miller. Do you keep him in there? Do you maybe give it to Jamie Shackleton instead? But then again, he had a bit of a difficult time against Efron Mason-Clark against Peterborough. So, yeah, it's a bit of a conundrum. I, for the record, think that he'll stick with Archie there. But if it is going a bit awry, I think Farke won't hesitate to make the change that he did with Byram against Cardiff on the opening day when Leo Yelder was having a bit of a tough one and just, you know, get the youngster out the firing line.
Yeah, I think you back Gray. You probably have worked on it a little bit or talked about it since. And you probably have briefed your wingers and said that he might need you to double up at times. You know, he might need a bit more support. He might need a centre back to come across. He might need Rodon to help him out a little bit more at times. I did not know that Liam Miller was on loan from Bale.
From where, sorry?
Bale? Yeah.
What kind of 1980s pronunciation is that?
Do you know he's Canadian as well? Did you know that?
I do know he's Canadian, yeah. And yeah. He's not one of these played for England at under 17, 18, 19, 20 and then went, oh, my great granny's Canadian. And then ended up playing there. He's actually played for Canada at all the underage groups.
It felt for a minute there that you were going to take aim at Scott Arfield, and I simply wasn't going to have it. but then you said played for England Youth International, and I settled back down into my chair. You know, in an ideal world, Leeds would just go and buy Miller. And
why? And I don't think he's that good.
Well, no, but just so that Preston didn't have him anymore. But this is a point that I was going to make earlier when we were talking about transfers. Doesn't it feel like in the Championship, now the parachute payments thing will be the downfall of this argument, but doesn't it feel a little bit like financial fair play or profit and sustainability, rather, is working, is having an impact, at least on clubs who are willing to submit to it? Because Leeds have the kind of ownership and the kind of access to wealth
that means they could have simply bought all the solutions to their problems this season, and they could have come into January and spent a shed load on what it is they need to fix this team and fix the, plug the gaps. But instead, we're talking about loans because, you know, profit and sustainability basically has restricted the headroom, I suppose, for spending. So they're looking at, you know, loans only, that there isn't really that scope to go and spend big. That's what it's meant to do, isn't it? You know, it's meant to stop teams from just buying success. And I suppose it's similar situation in the Premier League right now, where lots of journalists who cover Newcastle United are putting out lines saying, you know, this is really that they're being held back because they can't spend what they'd like to. Isn't this what the game's meant to do?
Yeah, I mean, the counterpoint would be that aren't the rules changing next summer or this coming summer? Because they've found that it maybe punishes lesser teams disproportionately compared to, you know, the wealthier teams like your Newcastle, Man City, Chelsea, especially with, you know, the charges that are being brought against Everton and Nottingham Forest. And also, it's profitability and sustainability. So, you know, that's the actual literature on it. So jot that down.
Look at the table, right? Leeds came down with their parachute payments. So you would expect the parachute brigade to all be there in the top positions. And
they aren't always, though. Like, look at the teams at the bottom half of the table.
They're not always. But you look at the table. It looks competitive. Well, I say that with Leeds in fourth being so far ahead of Sunderland in seventh. But that last playoff spot, or even the last two playoff spots, those, to my mind, are accessible to everyone currently, down to like 10th, 11th maybe even.
Okay, how about this then? Let's not talk transfer fees. Let's talk wages, because Leicester went and bought Connor Cody and Harry Winks, who have played Premier League football for the past decade, pretty much. Do you think they're on pennies?
No.
I think they're probably on a lot more than your average player at, I don't know, say 19th place Plymouth.
But surely wages come into P&S.
Yeah, they do. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. What are you saying?
So I'm saying that, yeah, clubs that have the resource to do it, do you actually employ those resources? Leeds will be doing the same. Leeds' wage bill will be higher than teams in the bottom half of the table.
Naturally, yeah, absolutely it will. But
they
also
have higher at the table.
But also their revenue is higher. They sell more in terms of tickets. They can make more money on a match day. They certainly sell more merchandise than anyone else in the Championship by a very, very long way. So they have the kind of, there's the justification for spending those wages, but they're not able to go out and spend 20-30 million in January was my original point.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. I mean, Leicester are thinking about bringing in Stefano Sensi from Inter Milan, you know, an Italian international who is, again, has played Serie A football for a very long time. So they kind of are going out there and doing whatever they want, and they are 25 points clear of sixth place Coventry. So I'm just not sure how much that argument holds up, is all I'm saying. Moving on from you moonlighting as Martin Lewis, we will now. Well, I'm going to give you some time now because you've got a bee in your bonnet about this, and it's something that you're going to write very passionately this week. Today, on the day that we're recording, it's Eddie Gray's 76th birthday, and you've kind of got a nugget of an idea that you'd like to impart to the Leeds United fans.
I just think it's time. Right now is the time to show people like Eddie Gray and Howard Wilkinson, those two in particular, there are others, of course, but those two in particular, that not only are they loved at Leeds, but their contribution is going to be marked in a lasting, kind of permanent manner. You know, I think this kind of naming stands after people is obviously a really good way to mark somebody's contribution as a legend. There's only so many stands in a football ground, so there's a kind of difficulty there. And when Leeds have
as many legends as they have had. You know, when you have a team that does what that Leeds team did, it creates a problem, you know, a kind of legacy problem of, well, who do we give the stands? You know, who do we name the stands after? But there are other ways in which that you can mark permanently the contribution of someone, like with a statue. You know, build the statue now is the kind of, as a modern day football phrase for somebody who's who's contributed mightily. And yes, I'll accept that Eddie Gray knows how much he's loved at Leeds, because he can't go to Elland Road without being stopped for a million photographs and autographs. The fans certainly let him know that he's still valued after his contribution in so many different roles. But I just think that the here and now is the time to celebrate the contribution of people like that, so that they can actually enjoy the unveiling of things and the celebrating of things, and actually be here to contribute to those moments and talk about it and be interviewed about it, and kind of, you know, everyone can get their content from it, the club included. But I just think that moments like that shouldn't be left. You know, there was a really horrible period during COVID when Leeds United lost a lot of their legends. And I just think that should, I think that period should be a lesson to football in general, to celebrate people worth celebrating right now in the present. And Eddie's 76th birthday, I think, it's just a good reminder of that. Do you remember when there was the talk of renaming Thorpe Arch after Marcelo Bielsa? And I think everything would have been, all of the ideas to permanently mark Bielsa's contribution, all fine ideas. There was an element to me of playing to the crowd. We've sacked this man that you loved, but don't worry, we value him too, and we're gonna do something that shows that we loved him too. It was probably all contingent on getting an email back from him that I don't think would ever have been forthcoming for Messrs. Radrizzani and co. But there was that talk of renaming Thorpe Arch after Bielsa. I think if you asked Bielsa, he wouldn't have it to begin with, because he's that kind of, he's got that humility about him, that extreme level of humility. But I think he would probably himself suggest you should name the training ground after the man who kind of pioneered it, in Howard Wilkinson, and a man whose contribution has had such a long lasting, forward reaching impact. You know, think of all the players that have come through there because he had such a passion for youth development and how Leeds should develop their own.
You think about how instrumental he was in the breaking ground of St. George's Park. So not just Leeds United, but English football in general.
Yeah. And that photo, that brilliant series of photos, the two photos that Leeds put out on Tuesday night, of Archie Gray stood in front of Sam Byram as his mascot, as a small, small child, and then stood next to him as his teammate a few years later. That's, you know, proof of itself of what a youth-focused academy and a training ground that kind of has that at its heart, the idea of producing your own. That's what it can do. I just think those two are very, very worth celebrating, and it would be absolutely tremendous for them to be present at the celebrations.
I completely agree, and I think a lot of fans will be sharing the idea with you today on Eddie's birthday. So don't get any ideas about saying that you came up with it yourself, because I'm sure it will be a little kernel.
I know that the 49ers are aware, because when Marati was with the Trust recently, I think that's one of the points that was brought up at their clandestine meeting, at which there were no notes taken.
Nice. Was it in an underground bunker as well?
It was, yeah. And nobody turned the lights on or anything. That point was made, that these are people, you know, that need to be paid tribute to in a permanent and lasting and significant way. So I know that the ownership are well aware of the need to do that. It'll be interesting to see how much time they kind of invest in exploring that and what they come up with.
It will be interesting, and I'm sure that they'll make good on those. I wouldn't want to call them promises, because again, no notes were taken. Neither Graham or I were there, but you'd like to think that they didn't exactly say no to those.
No. That's simply not. It's not my topic.
yeah, it'll be good to see what they come up with that sort of thing. This is just about, we're just over an hour into this week's recording, so I think we'll wrap up very, very shortly. But as usual, Graham, any parting comments ahead of Preston this weekend?
No, it'd be nice for nice to see 3-0 win, wouldn't it? I might go and investigate the odds. Not to actually do anything about it, because I never do, but just be interested in what the odds of a 3-0 win are. I wonder what the odds would be on four consecutive 3-0 victories. I'd like to know
how
those
about
odds.
13 consecutive 3-0 victories, just like Leeds' run in the cup that obviously came to an end.
Yeah, imagine if they won 3-0 again. They,
I could see it. I could see it happening.
Are you ready to say yet that the automatic places are gone?
No, absolutely.
Are you ready? Are you ready to say yet that the title is gone?
No, Elton John, I'm not. Now go on, say, are you ready again? I'm ready to say the title's gone. Yes.
Yeah, I am. I'm of the same mind. But the weekend has made me reassess a little bit as to whether it necessarily has to be playoffs for Leeds. I think we have to hope that Ipswich haven't had their wobble, you know, that wasn't it.
Well, they drew four times. That's not a wobble. They hung in there.
They did, but they dropped points, didn't they?
Yeah, at a time when Leeds also conveniently dropped points.
Yeah, well, that's it. So that's why Leeds have to hope that wasn't it in terms of Ipswich's wobble, and the wobble is still yet to come.
Southampton will have another wobble. I know they lost four in the spin before Leeds went to St Mary's and kickstarted this 20-game unbeaten run, but you'd have to say that they will. You know, teams don't go on 35-game unbeaten runs in, well, actually, apart from Arsenal's Invincibles, but you get the gist, you know what I mean? It's very rare that they do.
Yeah. So I think second spot is alive still. You know, it's faint. You can barely hear it, but it's there, you know, calling to you from beyond the grave, banging on the coffin. I'm still here.
Right. Okay, well, ending on that somber note, somewhat Frankenstein-y, I'm alive sort of theme, we're going to close out this week's episode. Graham, thank you again for joining me. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Inside Elland Road podcast. And we'll be back next week, hopefully, after another 3-0 win. Bye for now.
Cheers.
The Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.